How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is October 14, 2014. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We got so much news to talk about here today, including Raw from Monday night, where we got a pay-per-view match for free, as Jerry Lawler explained it. We have matches for Hell in a Cell. We got so much stuff. Dave, what's going on?
Tons of stuff's going on. I'm just trying to keep up with everything, and I still have a lot more to watch, so there's a lot of stuff going on.
What did you think of Raw?
They did a lot of wrestling on the show, really long matches. So it didn't have much of the negativity that the shows have had in recent weeks. But I wouldn't go so far as to say it was I don't know. Nothing really grabbed me as far as it being like a good show, but it was an okay show. I mean, it was a lot of constant changes. You know, another day of lots of changes in direction, as we saw by the Cena Ambrose match, which actually was, as of this morning, was going to be on next week's show, but they moved it up a week. And let me see, the Bella segment that was going to lead to their pay-per-view match didn't air, that was scheduled. So I don't know if that's next week or what happened, but they redid the show many times. Flair wasn't on the show. Although he was there, but he was gone. I don't know exactly how early he was gone, but he was gone pretty early when he wasn't written into the show. And Jake Roberts was there. And what else? I'm trying to think what other stuff that was changed. Just the getting the Cena Ambrose match off of the pay-per-view. The decision was kind of that they felt that they needed matches directly advertised for the pay-per-view as opposed to ambiguous matches. And they wanted those matches. I guess they wanted them as done as soon as possible. I mean, the Orton challenge was already written into the show before the Cena Ambrose match was put on the show. So, that just a lot of different things going on all through the day. And that's the main stuff.
You know, the one thing about the show that really stuck out to me, and the thing that kind of really bothered me the most about the show, they have been doing this thing for weeks with John Cena and Dean Ambrose. They're at each other's throats. They both want Seth Rollins. Blah, 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 blah. And they come out at the beginning of the show and they're threatening to kill each other and all this and that. So they announce on the show that they're actually going to be doing it tonight. We're actually going to get the pole match for the pay-per-view tonight. And
the pole match was pretty lame, I thought.
It wasn't much of a pole match, but the bigger issue was they do the pole match and everything like that, and Dean Ambrose wins the pole match after, everybody runs in. John Cena's given Kane the AA, and as he's giving him the move, behind him, Dean Ambrose is climbing up the thing, and he grabs the contract, and he wins the match. So, as soon as he wins the match, John Cena just applauds him. And then he turns his attention to Randy Orton, and then the show ends with Ambrose and Cena both facing off against their opponents for the pay-per-view, and like John Cena doesn't care. He doesn't care one bit after all of that he's not getting Seth Rollins. He's not even angry that this guy got the contract behind his back. He doesn't care one bit about this contract immediately after the match ends. And it was just kind of like, boy, did this make me care less about that show.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been the case for years. That's just how they write the character, and that's what they want. That's what they want out of the character. They're so afraid of the idea of a babyface whining and complaining, so they created this babyface who is always happy. You can't get him mad. You can do what you want. I mean, you can get him mad, but he doesn't get too mad, and he's never going to complain. But the problem with that is if he doesn't, how many times do we have to say it? If he ain't mad about him being wronged, the fans aren't going to be all that mad either. And if the fans aren't all that mad, that decreases your interest in his matches. It's a bad deal. I mean, there is a balance. I mean, if a guy came in there and for year after year was always getting wronged and was constantly complaining, today's fans would turn on him. I mean, I remember even in the early 80s, it was funny because they would always do the angles in the AWA with Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel, where the heels would always attack him and beat him up, and it would lead to the revenge and everything like that. And Jesse Ventura came up with this the uh, the name, the High Criers, because they were always complaining. And it did kind of, you know, stick. And it was kind of, you know, wasn't a negative then, but it, in time it turned out to be a negative. And the problem is if you got a baby face today, you know, in the old days, it just wasn't that, you know, if a baby face was wronged, you wanted him to stand up for himself. Now it's like, you know, they want him to stand up for himself, but they don't want him to complain. And it's just a real tricky thing, because it is true that if he complained too much, if he went too far in the other direction, it would be a negative. But the direction that he's in now, it's a negative as well.
So let's start at the beginning here. We got a lot to talk about here on this show. They did, as noted, do the segment at the beginning where they were plugging the pole match. Dean Ambrose came out first. He's going all crazy. And then Cena came out and told him to relax. The match is 2 weeks away. You should calm down. Let's not go out of our minds here. And he tells him to shut up, stop being crazy, and spend the next 2 weeks getting ready. And Dean Ambrose says, I am ready. I've been ready to whip your ass for years. And he told him not to talk to him like a chump, not to give him goofy advice. Cena cut him off, told him he's been on the mountaintop 15 times. Ambrose better be careful. He was going to throw it all away. So finally, Hunter comes out, and he repeats the fact that there are 2 weeks until the match. And Stephanie suggests, well, what if we do a tag team match tonight, and we team John Cena and Dean Ambrose together? And Hunter says, well, obviously there's no way they'll be able to do that without ripping into each other. And so they sarcastically make a bet about whether or not these two guys can get along and work a tag team match. And so Stephanie signs a three-way, Cena and Ambrose against Gold and Stardust and the Usos. And her bet, by the way, is that they will get along, and Hunter's is that they will break up. So they have the match. It's Cena and Ambrose against Gold and Stardust and the Usos. And sure enough, the guys get along just fine. They do the tag team match. Cena gets the hot tag to Ambrose. He goes crazy, runs wild on everybody. Cena does a dive off the post. Ambrose does a dive off the post.
He does a elbow.
And it was kind of like he just jumped and fell backwards on everybody. I guess it was an elbow.
Well, it was trying to mimic the Randy Savage elbow drop, but off the top ropes with everybody catching him.
That's right.
So, by the way, he was really, in his promo, Dean Ambrose was really doing Randy Savage. I mean, not like a Jay Lethal, you know, the Jay Lethal complete imitation, but more of a using the man. I mean, he takes from a lot of different people anyway, and Randy Savage is obviously one of the key people he takes from. But it was really clear the way he was doing his interview that he was channeling Randy Savage more than usual.
So he does a big dive. They get back in the ring. Cena and Ambrose do their double finish on Gold and Stardust, and they get the pin. So as usual, in Vince McMahon's WWE, even in a three-way, the two big single stars had to pin the tag team champions and not the Usos. And of course, this will not lead to a title shot.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to pin the Usos, though, because the Usos are the challengers going for the belts. And there are also other baby faces that are actually pretty popular right now.
Maybe you could put another team in besides Gold and Stardust. How about that?
You could have. I mean, you could have done that. Yeah, I don't like the idea of the champions losing, although we actually had three of those tonight.
Yes, we did.
I mean, with Sheamus and The Miz, though, it was fine because it's building to a championship match. But, yeah, we're back to the thing where, like with Ziggler, I mean, he got squashed by Rusev, and then he didn't get squashed by Orton. They had a nice competitive long match, but he got beat by Orton. But in both cases, it's not leading to championship, you know, matches. So again, the title, you know, that's been devalued remains devalued. And in the tag team situation, yeah, it's like, you're right. You wouldn't want the champions to lose unless it leads to a championship match. And in this case, they're not leading to a championship match. So it's just basically, making your champ, you know, weakening your titles. But they're already weak. I mean, like, you know, when the day comes to rebuild them, they can do it. But it didn't, you know, it's probably not any time in our lifetimes, or at least as long as this mentality is there. You know, we're not, you know, those titles are just going to be worthless and stay that way.
So then we had Stephanie, I guess, winning the bet. And so her and Hunter came out, and he paid her $1. And he said that he hated to lose. Maybe they just needed the proper motivation. And so he went crazy and signed the no-holds-barred pole match for later on tonight. At which point, JBL yelled, they're throwing away a pay-per-view main event. Which, in fact, they did.
Well, it was at best third from the top on pay-per-view. So not really, but yeah, I mean, it opens up. You know what? It was for the best for all the reasons, you know, because the, you know, it gives you something direct to advertise rather than something ambiguous. And so, and for a pay-per-view, that's almost not always. There's exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, when you have pay-per-views with ambiguous matches, they usually don't do well. Not that the pay-per-view economics aren't completely different now anyway, but it is for the best, to do it this way. Plus guys working twice. I don't like guys working twice on a pay-per-view because it's kind of overkill. And it also opens up a spot for another match, which depending on what the match is, it would be either good or bad. I don't know which.
We had AJ Lee and Layla against Paige and Alicia Fox. There was an inset promo with AJ before the match, and she said she hated all of the other divas, but she hated Layla the least. And she wanted a hug, and she hugged her, and Layla was clearly annoyed.
Well, so was AJ. It was the fakest hug in the world.
Yeah. So that led to a match here. It was AJ and Layla against Paige and Alicia. Paige wanted nothing to do with AJ. Alicia missed a dropkick in the corner. AJ went to tag Layla, and Layla abandoned her, just like AJ had abandoned Emma last week. And then, despite being abandoned, AJ still hit Alicia with the Shining Wizard and pinned her. And then she killed Layla afterwards, and she left having just essentially destroyed 1, 2, 3 people all in one segment.
Well, I guess.
I have no understanding of why this was done.
Because I think in the sense of with she didn't really destroy Paige, and Paige is the one that's the opponent.
Well, she didn't, but she did beat them 2-on-1 after being abandoned by her partner.
Yeah, but Paige wasn't even in the ring or hardly in the match anyway. So it wasn't really like Paige had anything to do with it. I mean, you know, she beat Fox, who they're doing nothing with, and she beat up Layla, who they're doing nothing with, and she's the champion. So it wasn't that bad. You know, if she'd laid out all three of them and had laid out Paige, who's the challenger coming up, yeah, that'd have been stupid.
We had footage of the Big Show ripping down the flag for the 9,000th time. And then Hunter and Stephanie were backstage. Randy walked up, Randy Orton, and he said he wanted the loser of the Cena-Ambrose match in a cell match of his own, and he made it clear multiple times that his match in the cell would be the main event at Hell in a Cell, and Hunter said that this would be a good idea. Are they really headlining with Randy Orton and Cena?
No, the idea is, I don't know what the order's going to be. I mean, so I don't have that answer, but I know that they were very much concerned, and that's one of the reasons that's another reason that they did the thing, you know, what they did tonight, was that they was very concerned about the idea that Randy Orton was getting the consolation prize in a match that, like, you know, he's getting the loser, which he was. You notice that they never said Randy Orton's getting the loser.
He said the other one.
Randy Orton's getting the other one, and they made sure to say that it was the main event because they don't want John Cena to be in the consolation. You know, the consolation match is kind of like meaningless in tournaments. The third place match, nobody cares. And in this one, they really want people to care because it's John Cena and Randy Orton, and they somehow want you to care about this.
Do you remember that one time when those two guys had a match and it was going to be their last match of all time?
Yeah.
That was years ago. That was many matches ago.
Yeah, but you know, it's wrestling. I mean, Tanahashi and Okada did the same thing in their main event in the Tokyo Dome. They were gonna that match that they had in October of last year was supposed to be their last championship match, and now they got another one. So, you know, you can't expect bookers to keep something like that straight. And I mean, it isn't like, you know, they didn't wrestle each other a million times, or you know what I'm saying? It was bound to be like that. Especially when they have so few main eventers and they let so few people into the main events, they're kind of going to run into this situation where they're going to keep putting those guys against each other.
We had Randy Orton versus Dolph Ziggler. Cesaro was doing commentary, and then Seth came out to watch after a while. Had a pretty long match. Dolph made a big comeback, went for the super kick, got power slammed. Orton hit the draping DDT, went for the RKO, got cradled. A lot of near falls back and forth. They got a light, this is awesome chant. And finally, they did this finish, which was actually awesome. Ziggler goes for the Famasser, but Randy Orton catches him on his shoulders. lifts him straight up like he's going to do a last ride power bomb, but instead tosses him up and hits him with an RKO on the way down. Awesome finish. Orton got a pretty big babyface pop, actually, for this finish.
Orton was very... I really sensed a lot of teasing of Orton as a babyface, especially...
I'm telling you, it's coming.
Yeah, it does look like it's coming. I don't think it's a good idea, because look at the, you know... They already got a top crew of babyfaces, and they're weak on the heel side anyway. But, yeah, it does look like it's coming, because it looks like... Because they're really building this idea where you want to see Orton get at Rollins.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was
the
underlying...
That's really what this was all about at the end, the big stare down there at the end.
Yeah, they really... You know, the whole show was pretty much built on, you know, like, that pretty much everybody wants to get at Rollins. I think we may get, like, a pay-per-view four-way, where it's Cena, Orton, Rollins... and Ambrose, maybe that would be the, you know what, that could be on the December pay-per-view, where the winner gets Brock at the Rumble, which would be where, you know, whether it's still going to be Cena or not, I mean, they could change their mind, because it is supposed to be Cena and Brock.
Why would
the Rumble.
Seth even be in that match? He's got the briefcase. He can have Brock anytime he wants.
Because then you get two. They've done that before. You can get two. You've got your.
I see. So you get two chances at the title.
Yeah, you can get your regular chance, and then you still got the briefcase to cash in later. Yeah. Well, but Seth isn't going to be the one winning, so that doesn't matter. But I know. Yeah, I see what you're saying. But they've done that before.
So Orton celebrating his win. Seth gets in the ring, gives Ziggler a curb stomp, and they go head to head with each other. And then that led to another segment with the same deal. And by the way, that was the tag champs and the Intercontinental champ both beaten decisively within the first hour and 10 minutes of this show, for those of you keeping track.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Intercontinental champion pretty much got squashed on SmackDown as well, so it's not like that's nothing new.
Seth Rollins and Jack Swagger, there was a light We the People chant. The crowd really wasn't much of a crowd this evening, I got to say that, here in Atlanta. Orton came out to watch, Swagger was distracted, God knows why. Allowed Seth to hit a running tope, which led to nothing. More wrestling. So finally, Swagger makes a big comeback, hits the ankle lock, Seth gets out, trades some near falls, and then out of nowhere, Rollins just cradled him for the pin. And then after the match, Orton ran in and gave Swagger an RKO, got in Rollins' face, and as noted, they were really teasing an eventual match between these two guys. And I gotta say, the crowd was buzzing here. It was better than anything in the match. And then finally, Rollins backed down and bailed, and everybody booed him for backing down from Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Had a Dean Ambrose interview with Renee.
He's got I thought on, as far as the Rollins match.
Not much. I almost fell asleep during this match.
No, the Swagger match. They gave Swagger a lot of offense. I mean, it was like way more than I expected. And they went, and you know, I mean, the story of the show was really long matches until the main event. I mean, they had four matches that went over 14 minutes. And I mean, usually on Raw, you may get one match like that. And usually they, you don't even get one. Usually they kind of time the main events to be in the 13 minute range. But so yeah, they had a lot of, you know, early in the show, it was, you know, instead of doing a lot of bad segments, they did a lot of long matches, some of which were, you know, I thought the Rollins Swagger was good. The Orton Ziggler was pretty good. The Usos three way, meh, I don't know. Three way tag was okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it didn't really...
To me, it felt
special.
Like a show where they just didn't have a lot of ideas, and they were just looking to fill up 3 hours,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. But I don't mind a show where they don't have a lot of ideas, because a lot of their ideas aren't good. So when you don't have a lot of ideas, you don't have, like, the really bad segments that you've had in recent weeks.
Well,
so,
that is true.
Yeah.
Tom Phillips interviewed The Big Show. The Big Show said that he knocked out Rusev. And even if he didn't win their match, he knew Rusev was not unbeatable. He said Rusev had a glass jaw, and he was going to smash it tonight. He said, no offense to Mark Henry, but if someone had to carry 318 million Americans, they could put that weight on his shoulders. And he says, I will show Rusev exactly what I learned in sensitivity training, which I seem
we never
to recall
saw.
They, yeah, those must have been some terrible vignettes.
Yeah, we never saw them.
Think about all the terrible vignettes they have aired.
Well... That was like done because they swerved everyone on The Rock, but I figured they would air it on Friday, and
they didn't.
They didn't, yeah.
No. Rusev and The Big Show. Lana came out and did a promo on Columbus Day, and Rusev said Big Show's actions would have consequences, And he also said if Big Show had a spine, he would rip it out with his hand and rip it off. I don't even know what that means, but that's what he said. So Big Show beat him all over the place, pillar to post, squashed him for the first half of this match. Rusev finally hits a drop kick, does his usual squeezing offense.
That drop kick was really good.
You know what it reminded me of was Minoru Suzuki when he throws that thing out of nowhere.
This was, well, there's who was the other guy that I see throw that thing at? Oh, Shibata.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's, you know, he's 300 pounds. And
he's
actually
a big guy.
Yeah, their drop kicks are better than his, but like I said, he's for a 300-pound guy to do that thing out of nowhere, that was pretty impressive. And yeah. Lawler really was like, how'd he get so high?
He's got very powerful legs. I'm sure he's quite a jumper. So Big Show made a comeback.
Yeah, for a 300-pound guy who's 6 feet tall, I bet he can jump pretty decent.
So Big Show made a comeback, missed an elbow off the top. He tried the knockout punch. Rusev ducked, hit the super kick. Went for the accolade. Mark Henry comes down to the ring. Rusev released the hold, knocked him off the apron, went back for the accolade. And then Henry hit the ring and clotheslined him for the disqualification. And so Rusev is celebrating afterwards his DQ win. He's waving his flag at ringside. And Big Show and Mark Henry leave the ring. They surround him. Rusev valiantly charges after Mark Henry, turns around into a knockout punch from the Big Show, 2-on-1 beating of this Russian
or
Bulgarian.
Really, well, he got sucker punched sort of by the Big Show, but he beat down Mark Henry pretty good.
He did, but man, he looked like the babyface here. These two guys double teaming him and cornering him. Poor sports.
Yeah, but when you're the Russian like that, generally speaking, that could backfire, but this one, it wasn't going to backfire. I mean, that is very often that when you do that, you ruin the psychology, but it didn't ruin it here.
We had the interview. Tom Phillips interviews Chris Lee.
It's Todd Chrisley.
That must be what I screwed up here. Anyway.
Todd Chrisley and his two sons.
He interviews Chrisley, who talks about how one of his sons in particular, is a giant WWE fan. He watches it every day, he said. And
that's
he got
scary.
To meet everybody, and it was such a blessing. And I cannot handle this show, but I've seen like clips of the show, and Chrisley was downright calm and sedate here on this appearance here. And this was the only thing he did on the show.
Yeah, it wasn't that offensive.
No, not at all.
Did you see the guy in the background?
I did not see the guy in the background.
Okay, you need to go back and watch the guy in the background during this interview.
Oh, no.
There was a bunch of fans that were just doing stuff in the background, and it got really, I mean, I'm surprised security didn't jump on him.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You go watch.
I'll go back and watch that.
Oh, yeah, major blowjob, whatever things.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Oh, yeah. You couldn't miss it if you were. I mean, I wasn't looking for it, but I was just like, from the second the camera was on, they were about two, three rows behind. And as soon as they saw the cameras on them, there were two guys, one guy in particular, and he was just going crazy. And it was like, this guy is going to do something. This guy's going to do something. And he didn't just, I mean, he just was on and on and on through that entire segment, getting lewder and lewder, you know, basically, pretending to give himself a blowjob. And then, which he wasn't really doing that. He didn't like pull his pants down, obviously, or anything like that. But he was doing those mannerisms. And I mean, I was sure security was going to jump on this guy, you know, right on camera.
I'm sure they gave him a beating after that segment went off the air.
Yeah,
well, I don't want to jump in and beat up a guy in the middle of Chrisley doing an interview.
I guess so. But I didn't hear anything from people in the building who, you know, said that they dragged anybody out. So I guess maybe they didn't.
Well, that was not a blessing.
Yeah.
Sheamus and The Miz. Miz Dow was doing the hardcore selling outside, and the camera is now focused on him doing it. And apparently this was a big hit with everybody in the back, but I don't know. To me, it was funnier when it was subtle and you had to look for it.
Yep. It's one of those things where you get something that's... I liked it, though. I liked it, but I know what you're saying.
It was funny, but they're going to ruin it is what they're going to do.
The, they're going to drive, you know, it's like whenever they get something, they, you know, they may drive it into the ground to where it's not what it is anymore, what it was. But I liked him. You know, he's really good. I like the matching outfits. I like the finish a lot. I mean, it's a bullshit finish, but the whole gimmick is that, Sheamus can't beat The Miz. So it leads to the pay-per-view match. So, you know, they're not going to have, I mean, The Miz pinned him already with a bullshit finish. So now they're going to do a, you know, we're going to get like a bad DQ. We're going to get a bad count out, but that's okay. Because it's building to something, you know? So I didn't mind it. And I actually felt that was,
it was actually a creative finish.
It was a very creative bad count out finish. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, so he's fighting with, Mizdow, and Miz crawls under the ring, gets in the ring, which he's not even aware of, and then Sheamus gets counted out. Sheamus was like trying to grab his leg, and he couldn't get him, and then the guy just kind of disappeared, and then he showed up on the other side of the ring.
Well, Miz and Mizdow were both climbing under the ring, and Miz got away, and Sheamus got his hands on Mizdow, and he bro-kicked him, and as he's doing that, Miz sneaks in the other side, jumped in the ring at 9, and Sheamus got counted out. So... Yeah. As far as bad finishes go, this was a creative one, so I got no problem with it.
I wouldn't even call it a bad. I mean, it wasn't a bad finish, but it's a cheap, cheesy finish.
Yeah.
In a cheesy program. I mean, I guess you could say that maybe Sheamus shouldn't be in a cheesy program, but he is. I mean, but if you're in with Miz, you're in a cheesy program.
He's a secondary champion, so he's got to suffer the consequences.
Yeah. That's right.
We had Total Divas backstage with NeNe Leakes, who looks like she's about 6.5 feet tall, or these other girls are just short.
And they are. They are all short.
Yeah, her and Cameron got into a catty argument. Cameron bailed. I thought for sure this would lead to a finish in the next match, but amazingly, it did not. It led to nothing. Naomi and Brie and Natty faced Cameron, Nikki, and Summer Rae with NeNe and Rosa Mendez at ringside. At least they have finally figured out that Rosa should not be in the ring.
Don't speak so fast.
Hey, it's been like 2 weeks now she hasn't been in the ring, so I'm counting my blessings, as Crisley would say. So Brie made a big comeback on Nikki. Cameron and Naomi had a brawl. Ring was cleared. Nikki tagged in to get her hands on her sister. Zero heat whatsoever for this. And then Brie pinned Nikki with the X Factor, and they played it up like it was a giant victory for Brie, even though it was here in a random nothing six-man tag on Raw.
Yeah, you know what? I guess we'll see.
I hope it was the blow-off.
It's not the blow-off.
Man.
But I thought that, like, Nikki getting pinned by Brie shouldn't happen before the first singles match.
I don't know what happened here, but it was weird.
I mean, they had other people they could pin. I don't really understand. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter because it's a nothing program, but just basic, you know, when I saw it, it was like, okay, you know, what's left. And I know, like, you know, they're scheduled for the pay-per-view. The idea originally, they were going to do the match for the name. Then it got changed to a match where the loser is the winner's slave or gopher or whatever, you know, type of a thing. But they were going to announce that on today's show. And
I guess that means that Nikki wins.
Nikki had to win. Yeah, Nikki's going to have to. Well, Nikki should have won the first one on pay-per-view anyway. But yeah, I would think that means Nikki wins. But, you know, until they announce it, it's not there because they change their minds constantly. But that was the idea as of this morning.
Alrighty, then we had, afterwards the babyfaces danced with NeNe afterwards, and that was her only appearance on the show. Had the usual Cena babyface promo leading to the main event, which was Cena and Ambrose pole match to get a shot at Seth Rollins at Hell in a Cell. We had Triple H, Stephanie, Seth, Randy Orton, and Kane all at ringside, contract on a pole. The story of this match was that Dean Ambrose is walking that fine line between being a beloved crazy man and a stupid babyface. He kept throwing...
But he won at the end, so it was okay.
He did win at the end. He kept throwing John Cena outside, and instead of going for the contract, he would go outside with Cena, and JBL's yelling at him for being an idiot. The heels are yelling at him for being an idiot. He goes out and he attacks the heels. They end up all getting in the ring, and as noted, the babyfaces clear the ring. Cena goes for the AA on Kane, and as he's doing it, Ambrose has climbed up and he's got his hands on the contract. And Cena turns around, Ambrose does the "you can't see me," and then he pulls it down, which, by the way, the camera missed conveniently. And so, as noted earlier, Cena is so angry that he applauds Dean for winning, and then he turns his attention to Randy Orton, and he has moved on with his life. And Cena is staring at Orton, Ambrose is staring at Seth, show goes off the air, and Cena and Ambrose apparently no longer have any issues whatsoever. So, there's your main event build.
Yeah, no, I think they'll probably bring them in a multiple-person match at some point, but yeah, after all that, I thought it was such a nothing match, and it was like so clear. I mean, as soon as they announced the pole match last week, it was like you knew what the gimmick was, that they're just, you know, that they didn't want to beat John Cena, and they didn't want to beat Dean Ambrose either, for that matter. I mean, that was, they didn't want to beat either guy. But then when you actually watch it, it's like, boy, did they not want to beat either guy.
They didn't want to beat the other guy, they didn't want to get either guy over, and they didn't want to get the match over. So they accomplished a lot.
They didn't want to get this match over. But yeah, no, I mean, as far as how over is, you know, because the key is, how over is Ambrose and Rollins right now? And I don't know that it's that over.
Well, certainly not after this, it wasn't.
Yeah, I wasn't, like, when it was over, it was like, how much do I want to see Ambrose and Rollins? And it's kind of like, not that much. How much do I want to see Cena and Orton? Not that much. So... that's not the emotion you want right before the big show.
No. Justin Roberts had his final night on Raw. His contract has expired. It has not been renewed. They have wished him the best in his future endeavors. And I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a story behind it. He's been with the company for 12 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
company man.
Yeah. I mean... You know, is it, you know, they are, you know, there's budget cuts going on, but there's probably more to it than that, but I don't know what the more to it is yet.
So what's going on with Daniel Bryan?
His arm is not regaining strength very well, and they don't know what's up. So he may have surgery, which is too bad, because if he was going to have surgery, he probably should have had it back, what was it, in August? Mid-August. We're now in October.
Yeah.
Mid-August was the week he was going to have surgery, where the doctor said, well, maybe you don't need surgery. And he was like, if I'm going to have surgery, let's get it done now so I can come back sooner. This guy is like, got the worst luck in the world, because if he's going to need surgery, obviously this delays the comeback. And with the surgery, I mean, depending on what the surgery is, it could be, you know, a pretty long recuperative period.
Did you watch the Total Divas where they were talking about his battle to recover?
I watched some of Total Divas, but I didn't really watch that stuff. No.
They
what did they do? Because, you know,
they painted him as a guy who he is a hippie. He wants to do things naturally. He wants to go to the acupuncturist and the chiropractor and do every natural thing. And if that doesn't work,
he goes everywhere. I mean, that's what he does.
I'm
all
sure
day.
He does. But they painted him as a guy who, and they even had like John Cena cut a promo on him, not on him, but he's talking to Nikki and just going, listen, the moment I found out that I was hurt, I had surgery like immediately. I did everything the doctor said, and I was back in 2 months. And this guy is out there rubbing leaves all over himself, and he should be working on trying to get back into action here. So they really painted him as a guy that didn't know what he was doing.
But that's not really accurate. I mean,
no, because it didn't make any sense, because he already had one surgery.
He already had one surgery, and he was willing and ready. I mean, he was there to get that second surgery in August, and then right before, the doctors told him, "Hey, you know what? You don't need the surgery. You can recover without the surgery."
My point is, they painted him as a fool on this show.
Well, that's good for him, for the fans. I will say that.
Yeah.
I mean, the poor guy. I mean, he's already got it bad enough. Yeah. So it's a bad thing. I mean, for his momentum and everything. God. So yeah, the thing is, right now it doesn't look like Rumble. Doesn't you know, I don't want to say anything about Mania because it's just way too soon, but it doesn't look like Rumble anymore. And he's not recovering. And, you know, at this point, I mean, when did he have that surgery? It was, what was it? Let's see. Was
it July, I think?
No. The original surgery was, I'm thinking it was May, wasn't it? The first surgery, I think, was May. May or June. But anyway, the thing he should be at, you know, we're talking this many months, and if your strength isn't coming back, you're going to need, you know, he just needs to get that surgery at this point. That's how I look at it.
All right. He was stripped of the title on June 9th.
Okay. So he had the surgery. He had the surgery before he was stripped.
That's right, because he had a neck brace on.
Yeah, so he had the surgery.
So this would have been early June, I guess, or late May, early June.
No. He had the surgery because, remember, it was one of those things where he missed the one pay-per-view, but they thought he'd be back for the second one, and then he vacated it when they realized he wasn't going to be back for the June pay-per-view. He missed the May pay-per-view. So he had the surgery.
I got the date for you right here. Daniel Bryan undergoes successful neck surgery May 15, 2014.
So that's our date. So
there you go.
There you go. So now we're in mid-October, and it's mid-May to mid-October, and the right arm's not regaining strength. He needs surgery again. That's you know, it's just too long for you know, no matter what you're doing, it's just too long. And he needs to get that surgery as soon as possible. That's all there is to it.
All right. So the WWE Network is now going to be running commercials. Thank God they will not be airing them in the middle of shows like they do on Hulu, which is just can't even get through SmackDown on Hulu. It's just infuriating with all the commercials.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. They do house ads anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't have a problem with the commercials. I'm just glad they're not doing them in the middle of the shows. They can do all the commercials they want any other time, like on the live stream or whatever. I don't care about that.
I don't really care one way or the other. I mean, it's an annoyance. I mean, I would just, the thing that bothers me about the WWE Network is that frickin' thing on the bottom, because I am always interrupted when I'm watching something on the WWE Network.
The thing on the bottom?
You know, where you, the forward and back, it's like the worst. It's like to get where you were.
Oh, I see.
It's a frickin' disaster. I mean, I could hit.
So you're watching it on the computer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I mean, I could hit pause, I suppose, but I never, you know, it's one of those things where I just don't do that because usually I get distracted and it's during a commercial. And then when I come back, you know, I may have missed something. And then trying to get back to where it is, it's so bad. I mean, it's like there's nothing else on the internet, you know, that you go to. I mean, whether it's a YouTube or UFC, you know, UFC channel or whatever it is, New Japan. I mean, every single thing that I, you know, Hulu, whatever, it was never, nothing's ever a problem except for that freaking WWE Network. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like, it's not like it's a deal breaker. I don't really care that much, but just, you know, but I mean, like they do, you know, they do commercials during every show. They're just WWE commercials. So if it's a Coke commercial instead of a WWE commercial, I really don't care. You know what I mean? I'm not, it's nothing to get upset over. And if they make some more money, look, the company's going to lose a lot of money this year. I don't want to see them lose a lot of money because the guys get screwed when they lose a lot of money. They are getting screwed. And, you know, I just want them to break even, make some money, whatever. It's fine. And, you know, if that makes a difference, that's good. I mean, the thing that's bad is that with the WWE Network is the guys' pay-per-view payoffs. You know what I mean? It's just a freaking killer on them. And they're not making, it's not getting made up. I thought that maybe they would make it up and they're not. So that's, you know, the guys are getting, I don't say getting screwed, but it's, you can, whatever it is. The network is not to their benefit right now. That's for sure.
Now, we've got some numbers coming up. What is, when are we going to get these new network numbers?
October 30th.
October 30th, the day before Halloween.
Yeah, the Thursday before Halloween.
Maybe they'll announce a new scrolling bar down there at the bottom as well.
They've been saying that. They've been saying they're going to do it for a while. They just haven't done it yet. That's one of the big things they were going to improve on. This is a big one. I mean, if they're not pretty much at a million, it's not going to be good, because I think the one thing that we've learned is that aside from perhaps WrestleMania week, there isn't really much that's going to jumpstart this thing as far as lots of people ordering.
So well, I got an official prediction for you. Tell me what you think.
I don't think, but go ahead.
950.
Could be. Yeah, that's 950 will be taken good. I actually, you know what? I even think 950 isn't too bad. If they get, let's see, I would say
this includes all of the Canadian subscribers
I would say 950. 950 sounds about where it should be, honestly. If they're below 950, that's not good. But the thing is, they need to get to 1.1 million as far as they need to be at a steady state at 1.1 million for next year. That's not to make money. That's to actually lose a lot of. No, it's not losing money. It would be for the company.
It's not where they would be, where they would have been had this not occurred.
Well, they need to get to about, what is it, one, I forgot the numbers already, but it's like 1.3, 1.4 to get to where they would have been had they never done it before. If they get to 1.1, they're at least okay in the sense that they're not hemorrhaging money anymore. So that's, you know, I mean, and they can cover their dividend as well. That's 1.1 million. So that's really the least you could do. I mean, I wouldn't call it successful. But anything under 1.1 million is extremely unsuccessful. And my thought is if you're not close to 1 million now, you're not really going to gain that much, because we've seen that it doesn't really pop that much. And even if it pops at WrestleMania, well, if they get a big increase at WrestleMania, then they're okay. But I don't know that they're going to get a big increase until WrestleMania. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a lot of the big increases that they were projecting for next year had to do with the launch and all the new markets. Well, almost all those markets have already been launched in August. So you're in those markets now. So, yeah, I mean, if it's, you know, between the Canadian and everything like that, yeah, 950 would be okay. If they're under 950, not good.
And take us through the New Japan show yesterday, and what do we have coming up? And what's going on with Jared and upcoming pay-per-views?
Well, they're meeting right now. I won't know till they get back. As far as what's going on, I mean, the gist is, I wrote about this out a month ago, but they're going to do the Tokyo Dome show, and if they break even or make a little bit of money, they'll try to do more regular pay per views. The idea of, you know, New Japan does one a month. Would they do one a month? I mean, if enough people order the Tokyo Dome and they think they can make money doing one a month, they'll do one a month. I think the mentality was probably to do four a year, not. But if the Tokyo Dome doesn't do well, you know, I mean, that's going to be it. One and done. And, you know, what that means, I don't know, like, exactly what the number would be to be okay. I think 10,000, 10,000 would be considered a success. So if they do 10,000 buys, now I don't know if they can with no television. Logic would say they can't, because TNA was doing under 10,000 with television, and Ring of Honor did 12 for their first show, but there was a novelty factor, and they also have television. And even though New Japan's far more major league than either TNA or Ring of Honor, you know, the guys aren't known in our country, you know, even though you do have AJ Styles and the Bucks and people like that, but they're still not, it's not on TV. You're not seeing the soap opera. So that's the deal there. So the next pay-per-view is going to be November the 8th from Osaka, or internet pay-per-view anyway, they're doing the Shinsuke Nakamura Ketsu Yori Shibata match for the Intercontinental title as the main event. They're going to put, you know, Tanahashi and Okada as the Tokyo Dome main event. And they're going to put them in a tag match with Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi against Okada and Yoshihashi. And then the other match that they've announced. They'll announce some more probably in a week, but the other match they announced is AJ Styles against Yoshitatsu. So Yoshitatsu is back. He actually did a run-in last night, or I say last night. It was actually earlier today, but it felt like last night because I stayed up till 4:30 in the morning watching that thing. Wow. It was a good show. Hey, look, if it was a bad show, I probably would have conked out at 2:30 or earlier. So it was Togi Makabe, Kota Ibushi, Yuji Nagata, and Tomoaki Honma against the Bullet Club, Carl Anderson, Tama Tonga, Doc Gallows, and King. Bad Luck Valet, Ibushi pinned Tama Tonga. Quick match. It was all action and everything like that, but, you know, they had to rush through it. The one thing that is negative about this pay-per-view for the Tokyo Dome is that I know they're going to do a four-hour window, which is better than a three-hour window, but the point is that this show rushed through matches, and it's not the Tokyo Dome. It's just the Sumo Hall, and they clocked in at 4.5 hours for the show. So they'll really have to rush as far as the Tokyo Dome show goes.
So this is confirmed 4 hours, or you're just presuming it's going to be 4 hours?
4 hours is the window. I mean, it's not confirmed as far as 1,000% confirmed, but it's, you know, that's the window that they have on January the 3rd is, I believe, midnight to 4 a.m. And then live would be 8, you know, Eastern. Well, midnight is Pacific, so it'd actually probably be 3 a.m. to, or wait, no, I take that back. Take that back. It's 3 o'clock start in Japan. So that would be... oh, God, you know what? They'll be going head-to-head with UFC because I think that they're going to be starting at live 9 or 10. Maybe with daylight savings time, maybe it's 10. So they'll probably start right after UFC. So it would be 10 to 2 Pacific, which would be 1 to 5 Eastern. And then they would go on the Sunday. This is late Saturday night. And then they would go on the Sunday, which would be the 8 to midnight slot. But the point is I'm guessing that the opening match will probably not air on the pay-per-view, but you're still, you know, it's like Tanahashi and Okada. This is, you know, my gut feeling on what you should do for Tanahashi and Okada at the Tokyo Dome is a 60-minute draw, and they won't have time to do it. So I hate when that infringes. And a lot, you know, Tokyo Dome shows have gone 5.5, 6 hours in the past. 6 hours is pushing it. But 5.5 hours, I've seen some great 5.5 hour Tokyo Dome shows. So the 4 hour thing will hurt the show. That is the one negative. Maybe they can get a 5 hour window, in which case I think that's doable. I don't know. Again, I don't know how the negotiations are going. I know it was a 4 hour window that they got from. You got to get your deals within demand and with direct and dish and all that. And they want a 3 hour window, so they got it up to a 4 hour window because their mentality is wrestling's a 3 hour show. So it takes fighting and everything. So they got it to four. Four's not really enough. Okay, well, anyway, so this was rushed. Then they had Chase Owens and Bushi for the NWA Junior title, which Chase Owens won. I was not that impressed with Chase Owens. He looked, he just didn't look like he should be on a New Japan pay per view show. That's all I got to say. He won because to set up Chase Owens against Jushin Liger, they challenged Bruce Tharp challenged Jushin Liger after they want the legend, and Jushin Liger accepted. So that will be perhaps at the Tokyo Dome, or perhaps it'll be on the November show, but it's coming. Kojima and Tenzan against Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Archer for the NWA tag team title. Smith and Archer won with a double team killer bomb on Kojima. And Archer got the pin, and then Tenzan shoved Kojima for losing. Kojima shoved him back, and Tenzan walked out on Kojima. Not good, because you take Kojima away from Tenzan, and not good. That's all I can say, not good. You can say they've gone about as far as they can with Kojima and Tenzan with this run, but... Kojima can go without Tenzan. He's still got a lot left. Minoru Suzuki and Takashi's... This match, by the way, was a good match. Minoru Suzuki and Takashi Suzuki against Sakuraba and Yano. Another rushed match, 5-minute match. Sakuraba and Suzuki were actually really good here. I mean, it did get you pretty excited for their singles match, which is probably at the Tokyo Dome. The finish was Toru Yano distracted the ref, gave Izuku a low blow and outside cradle. The Yano Izuka stuff was the usual comedic stuff. It wasn't too bad, and it was short. But Suzuki and Sakuraba were good. Alex Shelley and Kushida retained the IWGP Junior Tag titles over the Young Bucks and the Forever Hooligans. Long match, freaking really, really good. The finish was Kushida did ducked a kick and did a rolling Japanese rolling crotch hold on Kozlov. During the match, they were doing those sequences where everybody does dives, and it was set up for the last dive for Kozlov, where he was supposed to run across the ring, jump to the middle rope, jump over the top rope, flip in the air onto everybody. So he goes in there, jumps on the middle rope, slips, and his leg gets caught in the ropes, and he's hanging upside down. And it just was, you know, Romero, he almost hit his head on the apron. Romero just jumped and tried to protect him from killing himself. And he was, you know, he didn't kill himself, and he worked the rest of the match okay, but it's a really scary spot. But as far as the match went, like, this was a really good match. It was pretty much a great match. A lot of fun. Ryusuke Taguchi against Desperado. Taguchi won with an ankle lock. This was IWGP Junior title, and it looks like Taguchi has broken his ankle, broken the fibula, in his ankle. His ankle was all swollen after the match. It looked pretty damn hideous. Mm. Good match, but you know, if you compare it to the Taguchi match with Kushida last month, you know, nothing close. Yujiro Takahashi and Tomohiro Ishii for the NEVER Championship. Ishii regained the championship with a brainbuster. Phenomenal match. I saw Takahashi when he went against Tanahashi for the IWGP Junior title a couple of years ago. And this is when Tanahashi was as best and could carry anyone. And he carried him. You know, I mean, they had a 4.25 star match. This match was better. I mean, this match was, Tomohiro Ishii is just so phenomenal. And he was here. It was, you know, just a great, great match. Best match on the show, honestly. Shibata and Hirooki Goto against Nakamura and Yoshihashi. Pretty damn good match. Real, real good. It was no surprise. Shibata choked out Yoshihashi, let the choke go, and beat him with a penalty kick. I actually wish, because the choke is not over as much as it should be, especially since it's a staple for both Shibata and Suzuki. And can be for others, and it's a finish that doesn't really kill your body. And when he put the choke on Yoshihashi, you know, the people, it's not like they don't react, but they didn't react as big as they should have, considering how great the match had been up to that point. And then he let go and did the penalty kick, and the penalty kick's already over as a finish. But I know that, like, the ghetto mindset is that everyone's got their finisher. It's almost like the old WWF, where you got your finisher and you don't kick out of your finish, and when you hit the finish, it's pretty much the win in most cases. So that's what they did. I mean, Yoshihashi was there to, you know, as the guy to take the fall. I think everyone figured that out going in, but they liked him and they were behind him, and he's getting a little bit of the Hanma stuff where people are behind him and he's good. Okada and Naito for the Tokyo Dome main event spot. Rainmaker. Really, really great match. I've seen better with these two. They did an interesting spot early where Naito slapped Okada in the face, and he sold it like he was knocked out. They had the doctor out. They teased that Okada was going to be counted out of the ring. Naito actually threw him back in the ring. It was done very well enough to where, you know, everyone's panicking, going like, if this guy gets a concussion, you know what I mean? It's like, everything's up, you know, it just freaking kills everything. It's like a freaking UFC pay-per-view, you know, where you got this great match and it's gone. If this guy's got a concussion, let alone the idea that if he gets a career-ending concussion, that's for the whole freaking future of this company, because he's, you know, he's the next big superstar. But yeah, excellent match. And then, of course, main event, Styles and Tanahashi. Another excellent match, really, really great. It at points could have gotten annoying, because they did a lot of bullshit, but the finish wasn't. They got past. It was like teased.
What does that mean?
Well, like they had one spot where Tanahashi hits the high fly flow, which looks like the finish, and Jeff Jarrett pulls the referee out of the ring.
Oh, it's I see. That kind of bullshit.
So you don't like that. So that's bad. So that, okay, that's all well and good. So then there's another ref bump. Okay, this wasn't fun. I was going like, okay, this is no good. Jarrett jumps in the ring with a guitar and go, and it's like everyone, between the press conference and everything, they totally tease the idea Jeff Jarrett's hitting this guy with a guitar and Styles is going to retain the title. So Jeff's in the ring. He's got the guitar. And Yoshitatsu, Naofumi Yamamoto was his real name. Naofumi Yamamoto hits the ring. And I don't think people really knew who he was. I mean, the announcers, if you're watching it on TV, the announcers are screaming Yamamoto. So, they're telling you who he is. In the building, I think some knew and some didn't. But it was a guy, and he chased Jarrett out, and they were very happy that he chased Jarrett out. So Jarrett's gone. So then they went and wrestled for several more minutes, and Styles used a low blow and hit the Styles driver, which is basically a Styles clash, kind of dropped almost like a gonzo bomb. Pretty scary-looking move. Then he does a springboard 450, but Tanahashi got his knees up. Tanahashi did a high fly flow, and Styles got his knees up. Styles went for the Styles clash off the middle ropes, and Tanahashi escaped and slammed him off the top rope, crossbody, another high fly flow, and Tanahashi gets the win in 27 minutes and wins the championship. And it's funny because like this show was like, way better than pretty much, 99% of the, I think there've been a couple of shows this year that were, maybe there were a couple of shows that were close to this in the United States. I mean, one of the Ring of Honors and some of the really good WWEs, maybe close, probably not as many great matches. But it's like with New Japan, it's like after G1, I mean, this really was a great show, but it wasn't a great New Japan show. For a New Japan show, it was more like a good New Japan show, but the main event definitely delivered. The after intermission was all quite great. So yeah, I had loads of fun watching it. It's much harder to order. It's a pain to order, but now I'm a member of the club, so it ain't that much of a pain now. So sign up for Nico Nico, you got that. You can get all the Dragon Gate shows. It's a pretty decent service, so it's all well and good, and not going to be missing any more pay-per-views, so I'm happy.
So what's the deal with Peter Holman's drug test?
Petra Holman, I got to tell you this. So Petra Holman, after the Kung Lee thing, Petra Holman, he failed for drostanolone. So he cutting steroid. So anyway, he goes and says that there's problems with my drug test, that they took my blood after my fight and they screwed up and they came back and I didn't take my blood and there was all kinds of problems with my test. Okay. As soon as I heard that, I'm going like, are you this fucking stupid? Well, I shouldn't say that, but that is what that was my reaction. And I was amazing to me it's not amazing to me. It is what it is, but it's like, it's like sort of like this story, but it's like, if you fail for drostanolone, that's a urine test. That ain't a blood test. Okay. So actually, it actually came out today that that's exactly what it was. The Brazilian commission said, number one, he was not blood tested. Okay. So he said that they screwed up his blood test after the fight. He was not blood tested. Okay. And it was from his urine test. And they tested the A sample and they tested the B sample and he was positive in both. So there you go. That one, I mean, Kung Lee's going to get a hearing and Kung Lee may, there may have been problems and all that with the Kung Lee test, but the Petra Holman trying to jump on the same thing, ain't going to fly. I don't think, you got both, You got both samples, that the specimen's not been destroyed. You failed for Drostan alone.
All right, well, let's do some of the questions here before we wrap it up today. Mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com, everybody, if you want to ask questions. We'll be back on Wednesday. Who decides the guest host for Raw? It seems like they are people suited for a completely different audience.
Ultimately, it's the company kind of gets, you know, I mean, USA wanted the Crisley guy there to promote the season. People looking to promote and them looking to get a celebrity on. It's a combination of both. Obviously, the show with Kathy Lee did the lowest non-holiday audience of the year. So the idea is the celebrities help your ratings because they bring in curious outside people. Well, when you do your lowest rating of the year, that one probably didn't bring in too many curious outside people. So
no,
I don't think that the guys today drew any extra people. If the rating's up, it's probably the residue from The Rock's appearance last week, because when The Rock comes back, usually the second week rating is especially when he comes in with a surprise and if people, you know, may have thought they missed it. I'll tell you what shocked me, though, was the SmackDown rating being down, because, you know, that's the 15th anniversary show, and it's not like they really didn't advertise anything special for it. They brought in guys, you know, Teddy Long and John Laurinaitis and Booker, and they had a segment with
Rock. How are we supposed to know that? By watching it?
Yeah,
that's not going to help the rating.
Nope, it's not going to help the rating. That's right. And they didn't advertise any of it. You know, it's... But yeah, no, this the for 15th anniversary SmackDown didn't really do so well. So it's just whoever they can get. You know, guys maybe want to promote something. Usually it's, you know, sometimes it's a favor for the USA Network. And when it's a favor for your network, you do it.
Nicholas here says, where is Fandango?
He's dancing at house shows. Ever since he doesn't have a dancing partner, they've taken him off television. I don't know what the plan is for him now, but he worked Savannah and was it the other city, Macon, over the weekend. So he's working.
This person says, how many stars did Dave give the Island Death Match, where Antonio Inoki took part in an Island Death Match where him and Masa Saito fought all over the Ganryujima Island in Japan? It went 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 42 seconds.
So they say. It really went 47 minutes, but I didn't give it any stars because it was boring as shit. But it
so
was
minus one star per hour?
Something like that, yeah. It didn't really go that long.
Was Raven banned from doing his crucifix pose in WCW? And if so, why?
I don't know the answer to that question. Some people, you know, I mean, he could have been. Because he never did it, and it just could have been that people thought, somebody somewhere didn't think that was in good taste, so they didn't let it. If that's what happened, but the fact that he didn't do it tells me that he probably wasn't allowed to do it.
Is the recent Natalia TJ having marriage problems storyline on Total Divas 100% fiction, or is part of it based on reality?
I mean, I don't know. I think it's 100% fiction, though. I mean, I go with the impression it's 100% fiction. I mean, everyone's got problems, but you know, no. It's a storyline.
Let's see. I saw the WWE Vintage episode about Bruno. He says some of his punches looked really weak, the kind of thing that John Cena gets slated for. Is it a case of looking back on him with rose-tinted glasses, or was it just the era?
Just the era, you know, I mean, it was, that's all it was, just the era. People bought him and that was the deal. I don't remember Bruno's punches looking that bad, though, but I mean, it was, you know, he was mostly, well, it depends on the match and the circumstance. You know, he would do arm drags and things like that. And it depends on the point of his career. You know, obviously he did a lot less later in his career than earlier in his career.
All right, after hearing Dave state that Hogan versus DiBiase was the original Mania 5 main event, were there any plans to have the Hogan Savage match at WrestleMania 6?
That you're talking 2 years, that would be, by saying that, you're planned out 2 years in advance. Nobody's planned out 2 years in advance. I mean, they have planned out a year in advance, but not 2 years in advance.
All righty. And finally here, why has WWE, or has WWE not done a pay-per-view or TV taping in Madison Square Garden since Survivor Series 2011? They could have done SummerSlam there next year.
Too expensive.
All right. Well, there you go. I know it costs a lot to rent the Garden, but doesn't logic say they would stand to make a hell of a lot more money on a pay-per-view than a regular house show, since they do run house shows there?
Yeah, but there's costs of doing television there. It's just they do house shows there to kind of like keep a presence there.
Yeah.
They don't really make much money on it. When they're doing like this year's SummerSlam, which is going to be in the Izod Center, profit margin is so much higher than it would be doing it at the Garden, even though the Garden would be, you know, you could say the Garden's more prestige. It probably is, but it doesn't really matter. And I mean, as far as you're still in New York, you're still selling out the minute tickets go on sale. I mean, it's easier to draw at the Garden than the Izod Center. But the fact is, if you're doing a pay-per-view at the Barclays Center or the Izod Center, you're going to sell out. So, and you're going to do your big gate and you can charge, you know, your ticket prices, and you can make more of a profit. So it's, it's just a question of maximizing your profits.
All right, everybody. With that, we're going to wrap it up here for today. I want to thank everybody for listening. We're going to be back. We've got a lot of shows coming up tomorrow. Mike McGurk is going to be on the show tomorrow, so we'll have a lot to talk about there. All of the usual shows, lots of stuff up on the front page, so check it out, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.